This is the Common Geeking Program, a book club for nerd and geek culture where four individuals, each with their own domains of geekdom, discuss a topic from various nerdy perspectives. It's great. Great vocabulary there. Anyway, I'm the host, Austin. I'll be introducing the topic of the webcomic, Kill 6 Billion Demons. And with me are these fine young gentlemen.
So, I'm Colin. I hosted last week, and this week I'm going to be talking about a game called Hyper Light Drifter. It's a lot of fun.
I'm Jeff. This week I'm going to be talking about the show Supernatural.
I'm Pat, and this week I'll be talking about the Marvel Universe, specifically the comic series where Wolverine goes to hell.
That sounds like it's going to be a very silly one. Anyway, so
we made it through all of that pretty deadpan. This kind of sounds like a radio show I don't want to listen to at the moment.
Well, eat a dick, Colin.
Are you telling us we should record another intro where we're like
cutting each other off and being assholes?
Because I'm willing to do that. We can do that.
Just roll with
I'll be an asshole anytime you want me to be, Colin.
Anywho, Kill 6 Billion Demons is this really cool webcomic that I heard about recently, so I looked into it, and then I read through it voraciously, and pretty much, I had you guys read the first book of it. They've got like 2.5 books out now, it's ongoing, and in this book, what happens is pretty much you meet this girl, Alice, and she's trying to get laid, but then the night that she's gonna do it with this really nasty guy, apparently, like, it's whatever.
He didn't seem like a scumbag at first. He was kind of
like... No, he definitely seemed like a scumbag.
He was being weird, so but hard. He was also
Colin's
being
just
like,
I do that. Am I a scumbag?
I mean, I might
girls
be.
Into sex. My name's Colin Ketchin.
But it's like, he was trying to... I don't know. I didn't think he was, like, a total dick until, like... That everyone was like, "Wow, that guy's a dick." I'm like, "I guess I should think he's a dick too."
Okay. No, he was super. He was super fuckboy level right from the beginning.
Yeah, actually.
But anyway, I don't think that's the most relevant.
It's not.
Exactly, it is not the most relevant thing because while they're trying to get it on, he gets kidnapped and Alice gets transported to this world of demons and like shit goes crazy. There's like this key in her head and. She kind of wants to save her boyfriend. I don't know. That's, like, implicated. But what did you guys think stood out, really? I want to know.
All right. So the whole sequence of going from, you know, like, in the bed to demons bursting out of the closet to now they're in this crazy place visually was kind of arresting. I really enjoyed how in the process of moving there, it was very grotesque, like, just jamming a metal key into her forehead. It did a lot of, I think, setting up mystery very early on because you don't really know what's happening. And I'm actually probably not going to talk a lot as we summarize this because I don't totally know if I know what was happening through most of the comic.
Amazing.
Colin never ate the demon, so he was just like reading gibberish the entire time. And he's just like, this looks visually interesting, but I gotta tell you, I have no idea what's going on.
As someone who didn't grow up reading comics, I didn't know the words were important. I thought it was just like walking you through it visually.
You're kidding, right?
No, I am kidding. Actually, important. Oh, the pizza is on its way.
So anyway, I thought it was pretty cool that the whole first book, this chick has absolutely no idea what's going on. Mm. Like, Allison just gets thrown in this world, just gotta figure it out, just roll with the punches, which she does relatively well for someone who is a human thrust into this world of demons and, like, just there's this rock robot thing that's trying to take care of her, but she doesn't know if it's actually... It's an angel, but, like, visually, it's a rock robot that knows kung fu. Yeah. And prays before it kills people because it's a good angel, but there are bad angels, too, that just, like, throw ice picks through people's eyeballs.
I'm gonna put the brakes on this for two reasons, because
pretty
one...
pretty sure it was a sewing needle.
One
nice pick. Come on.
I was pretty confused reading the thing, and this is not doing anything to clear up my understanding of what's happening. If we could just do a quick like sequence of events, start to finish, that'd be really helpful for me to make my comparison. So once she gets sucked in, she gets the head key.
Correct.
I think I have notes.
I can explain that a little bit. So basically, when she gets in, she runs into this angel dude who. Or woman, I'm not fucking
sure.
It's a dude.
I think it's androgynous.
I don't know.
He takes offense to the fact that he's been called a female by the, like, slave trader.
Could be androgynous.
Like, I feel like the implication is that he's the genderless? Angel himself is not female, but the vessel is female. Austin? Is that? Do you think that's correct?
Angels are really interesting in this comic.
Anyway, the gender of the angel is irrelevant, largely. So she meets the angel, and this angel is like, "Yo, you've got some powerful shit in your head. We've gotta, you know, go find somebody." Because at first the angel thinks that she stole it, and they're like, and the angel's like, "You must be crazy powerful if you stole that thing." And then through like a big process, they find out that the key that she has is actually like one of the seven gods, which are the direct descendants from the original god, which split into two and then had sex. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I
understood very clearly.
Yeah, you're still missing the part where they were at war with each other for 7 years, and then they only had sex for 7 hours. So, like, you know,
seven blissful hours.
Godly.
Well, okay, the sex itself isn't important, but they had kids. That's why the sex is the more relevant part.
Okay, I didn't realize they had kids, and this is okay. So,
you think they just did like mitosis? Like,
I did. I thought that one god. Different components. Yeah, the one
guy split
into two.
The first one was mitosis, and then they fucked.
I thought that, because there are 777,777 universes that this god has created through its split. I thought it was just splitting the whole time, not reproducing and making
an entire
world.
No, that's how many kids it had.
I didn't realize that. I was about to say, because that is not a multiple of two.
Colin? Yeah. Like, how would that have worked?
Some of them died.
I don't know.
They mutated into three for one of them.
Yeah. Oh wait, but the seven are not the god's kids, right? The seven are
they're conquering.
Correct.
Kids. Yeah.
Although in a sense, oh my god, this story I love it because it draws on a lot of like Hindu and Buddhist mythology. I think somewhere in like the second chapter, I think they discuss this story that we're talking about, this creation myth. And the implication that it has is that, like, every part of creation is really just the result of the god who was, like, everything at one point saying, I don't want to do this anymore, it's boring. So they, like, split themselves up into everything else. So in a way, they are kind of a descendant or, like, children of the gods, but, like, really, you know, they're just people that happen to be super powerful or good at killing people. That gives you power sometimes.
The guy who gave her the key was one of the seven, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're right about that. He was, I think the word, actually I have this written down, demigurges, or demigurge. Yeah.
Demiurge.
Demiurge.
Demi, okay.
Yeah.
Demigurgles. Demon gurgles. I like that better. So after the gods, you know, made all the kids, everything kind of fell to ruin, seven demigurgles took over the remains of heaven, and... This, I guess what was revealed is that Demogurgle was trying to hide the key to stop people from taking it, so he just ripped her out of Earth and stuck it in her, and she just got dragged into this unwillingly. And then when she realizes that, she gets sent back to Earth. Right? So she goes through this crazy adventure, meets all these demons, realizes this thing got stuck in her face, and then she's just back in her apartment with a bunch of girls who are like... being weirdly invasive into her not sex life, because the whole like subplot here is her trying to lose her virginity, and the fact that she has a third eye does not trump the fact that she didn't have sex, which is a little strange.
I mean, one of the people thought that she was wearing a bindi. Yeah,
that chick like fucking hated her guts though.
Yeah.
Like, she clearly wanted her gone out of the house and like just looking for excuses to yell at her.
Oh man,
I have a question, Austin.
Yeah.
How many roommates did she have?
Oh Lord, I don't know. I think she had like four roommates. It's more of a suite.
Was it six?
Oh my god.
Were there seven of them in total?
No, I don't think so. And I don't think that's the direction this comic is taking.
Wait, are the
girls? I don't think that they're gonna say that they're gonna say that they are the demon gurgles or fucking whatever.
No,
I think that there just might be some kind of symbolic pathway there that the writers might have been trying to You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't
maybe.
Know if they
I,
ever
I
are going to go into characters that characterize
yeah,
those.
Yeah, I think that
anymore,
one
but...
might actually largely be a coincidence because those characters are just, like, not large enough to matter in the great big scheme of things.
Well, not yet, right?
The end of... Because the end of book one, if I am not mistaken...
Yeah, she goes back.
Yeah, she mm-hmm. goes back is the... Okay. Yeah, and then as far as the story has gone since then, we don't go back home.
Okay.
We're in Demonland. Throne.
So the end of book one, and I have a bit of confusion about this, of course. The end of book one ends with she goes back home, she feels really out of place, and like, who am I? What is my life? I've just been exposed to this multiverse, to these crazy things that I didn't really know existed. And the last thing the demon gurgle said to her before she went back to Earth was, kill 6 billion demons. And it kind of sounded like a command, which, when you know the name of the thing is kill 6 billion demons, it makes sense. But then... the angel or someone was talking to other people, and they were talking about someone or something saying, his name is Kill 6 Billion Demons. Like, it's a name? Is it a...
Yeah, that was weird.
What? I don't get... So the end of this is her boyfriend's there, she wants to save her boyfriend, she wants to get laid, and she has to kill 6 billion demons. That's where book one wraps up, I think. I'm pretty sure.
yeah, that seems about right.
Okay.
That's close enough.
Yeah,
I'd like to make a connection here. I mean, it is related to Supernatural, but also just like, you know, the world in general. I whenever I see things in literature that have like a group of seven people, I just immediately think that they're the seven deadly sins.
I having been raised a Christian, I read a lot of the book Revelations in the Bible. It's the number seven is just constantly, it's a recurring theme in our culture's understanding of what the apocalypse will be. And Austin told me earlier that the person who writes this comic goes under the screen name Abaddon, which is the name of one of Satan's archdemons in the book of Revelations. If you like, you know, apocalyptic spiritual sci-fi, Revelations is pretty good. Just throwing it out there.
As is Supernatural. Like, it's a very religious show.
Yeah.
I mean, it, like, I don't know if I'd say it's religious, but it
it's based on those ideas.
Draws a lot
yeah.
of things from religion and makes stories out of them.
Yeah, they like killing pagan gods.
Yeah, they kill the shit out of pagan gods.
And yeah,
there is one single episode that they kill all of the seven deadly sins.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
in one episode?
Yeah, they really...
Sorry.
Isn't that show been going on for like 82 years?
Yeah, it's on season like 10 now, I think. I wish that fucking angel person had a pronounceable name so we could refer to them as something.
Oh, actually, sorry. At the beginning when they give you they do have a little conversation after she wakes up in the room with the angel. They do have this little character that's the angel's name, but then after that the angel does some speaking, and that's the pizza. But the angel
God
speaks about its name, and it's some long thing. It's like 82 chains.
I'll be right
mic.
Downstairs.
Return from
you.
Emptiness to like kill the sinners or something. So,
yeah, but I'm not gonna say that every time.
But yeah, no. So we can refer to the angel as 82 chain.
82 chain.
I saw it was 82. I do remember that.
Oh, 82 white chain. Right. Sorry, 82 white chain. And I think that might also like shed some light on how you can consider naming someone Kill 6 Billion Demons, because if your names are just like really weird to translate into English, then I guess you can fucking say anything. Yeah.
That's a good point.
There was a page where they mentioned Hell 71, and they had a big Where's Waldo looking diagram.
Oh my god. I did not go through
what
that.
This building. I like that page a lot cuz like I said, I didn't really know what was happening. Now, if you decide to read Kill 6 Billion Demons, and it is good, I would recommend it. I'm having fun with it. But, like, if you're confused, that page with Hell 71 is just like, all right, all that shit you didn't understand, we're just going to put a definition for it on this page. That is, like, the index I was looking for. Because if you look at my notes, it says Purple Lady about 20 times. And then I actually put in here with, like, an exclamation point, it's Angel 82! Oh! I see, yeah, Purple Lady was Angel 82, exclamation point, is now delicious, question mark. So,
what?
I guess the page also raised some other questions.
Yeah, it's a colorful world.
I feel a little embarrassed not having understood
like,
so much of this.
I like that a lot of the buildings and shit are like the mummified fucking corpses of the old gods.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
I like the color palette because he doesn't seem to just stick to one overarching theme. He's got purples, yellows, blues, all these things. Like, if you look at a comic like Wolverine Goes to Hell, they stick more to the reds, the browns, making it look really demonic and like hell. But Abaddon, right, doesn't seem to be limiting himself by that. And I think it's a good look, because if there are really 777,777 universes, or hells, heavens, earths, it's good that he's not trying to go with just the standard definition of hell.
Anyway, no, Pat, what you were talking about was really cool, but is that, like, the extent of the way that you were comparing the two things? What else did you have that made you think that, like, Wolverine Goes to Hell was the thing to choose?
In that story, Wolverine gets possessed by a demon and dragged into hell, where he then has to face all of these creatures and people that he personally put into hell. Like, he has to kill them again in order to reach some divine conclusion about what's going on in his situation and get back to Earth and save his friends. The thing that stuck out to me was he doesn't know what's going on when he gets dragged to hell. He's just like trying to survive, just like her. Except he knows a little bit more what's going on because he's a superhero. He's been doing this forever.
She just kind of gets hell, what hell's it, like.
Yeah.
Alice kind of. Wolverine. His life is pretty hellish.
Yeah. Alice kind of gets thrown in there. No weapons, no training, no nothing. And that's kind of similar. Wolverine loses his adamantium, which is a big part of what makes him so deadly. But that does help increase his healing factor, and that just goes into a whole bunch of other stuff. But the main point was Alice has to go kill 6 billion demons. He had to kill a lot of demons as well.
Not 6 billion, but a respectable amount of demons, you know?
Literal and figurative.
Yeah. Except she has more of the goal of saving her boyfriend, and he has more of the goal of, I need to get the hell out of hell and go back to my friends and save them in Earth. So, like, Wolverine is focused on one task that he knows what to do, and she doesn't know what to do. I thought it was very interesting that the demon who was, it was like CO something.
The demon Gurgle?
Oh, yeah. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. It's like COECOL or something.
Yeah.
The little blue lady.
Yeah.
Oh,
little
yeah,
blue lady
cool.
Yep.
Who cool. was, like, part of a brothel, or, like, owned a
yeah.
brothel or something. As soon as she saw the key in her head, she was just like, all right, I'm piecing the hell out of here. I'm not dealing with my boss. I'm gone. I'm trying to help this lady get out of here because I know that this war that is coming over this girl's key in her head is a little bit bigger than what I want to be a part of. And, like, she just throws her back into Earth. I don't know how she's going to get back. I mean, she did go back, but how did she get back to hell? Like, Wolverine had to be dragged there. The key, she can just
go? Yeah, that's what it does.
Yeah, that's the primary function of the key, actually.
Yeah, is that it goes between dimensions, right?
I thought it just opened that one specific gate.
No, well, I mean...
Nah.
Well, maybe it's a key all the time, but when you stick it into people, it unlocks their death.
Well, that was the other
it's
thing.
Like...
If you read into the, like, little flavor text underneath the pages, there was one specific time where the god Yishun, I think,
yeah,
was talking to her disciples, whatever, and they were all trying to give an explanation as to who this girl was, I thought, because they were talking about the one who was chosen, how it unlocked something in her, and I'm not quite sure, like, if that was supposed to unlock an understanding about, like, her purpose in this world. Obviously, she's got more of a purpose than just kill 6 billion demons, I would hope.
She's gotta save her boyfriend. She's gotta get a good dickin'.
But the fact that a god who is supposedly doesn't even exist anymore is talking about her and, like, unlocking something in her leads me to believe that she has a higher purpose.
The fucking demon gurgles were talking about, yeah, I'm gonna keep calling them that. It's great. The demon gurgles were, like, talking about how they thought that the boyfriend was the chosen one, and they kidnapped him, which I assume was because someone was like, oh, the chosen one is at this location, and then they went there to kidnap him, and because they're all fucking, like, you know, sexists, they're like, it's obviously the dude, but it was actually her. I think, I was taking that as the implication, but fucking, like, what's his face, you know, the guy with the beard, the like number one demon gurgle, mm-hmm. was like, nah, I know who it is. I'm gonna put my key into her head.
Number one demon gurgle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that I was choosing to read it too, because like, I don't know, it seemed the most compelling to me, especially since like, it starts out like with this. I think, especially if you guys continue reading it and you get further, Alice's character develops much more, and I think that like, all of this elaborate backstory eventually it's not revealed yet. Technically, but I have a suspicion that all of this elaborate mythology is a setup for what is essentially like a lesbian harem comic. Like, she just gets like all of these people around her who are just like in love with her and shit, I'm pretty sure. But anyway.
How does this lesbian harem comic idea compare with Wolverine Goes to Hell?
Well, it doesn't necessarily compare to Wolverine Goes to Hell, even though Wolverine does like lesbians. But
I guess that's
it
fair.
Does a little bit go back towards something else that I'm pretty interested in, which is Metalocalypse, that used to be on Adult Swim and then got canceled because Cartoon Network sucks a bag of dicks. If you read more of the flavor text, the author, Abaddon, is super into metal bands such as Meshuggah and Gojira, which, like, technically talk a lot about mythology in their actual songs. So it's nice to tie in some of those things. He uses song lyrics a lot. But more so, there are bands like in kind of like a black metal genre. The one that comes to my mind the most is Behemoth. And their music videos are almost always in black and white with the exception of one color. They throw red somewhere. Maybe it's like slaughtering a goat and the blood comes out. Like there's a
story of my life.
Yeah. So
I hate it when that happens.
It's very, very, like, religious in the sense that they use biblical stories, but it's supposed to, like, worship more of the demonic side, like Lucifer and shit. So it's interesting to me that he's using these bands that are more towards, like, not the God side to describe his universe. So, like, it's interesting that he's using metal music and art style similar to Metalocalypse, even though he might not be influenced by Metalocalypse necessarily, but the art style of metal music in general to kind of show this dystopian place and set the tone for his demonic world.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I had no idea of that. I just knew about like the mythological influences. That's cool.
I would like to formally request as a group that we retroactively change Patrick's domain from Wolverine to Metalocalypse. That was solid. That was like some
if
solid.
If you want, that's fine.
Capital A stuff right there.
Solid. Didn't talk case. So much about the Metalocalypse world because that yeah. has nothing to do with this. That's just a metal band who like
fair
gets
enough.
In a crazy situation.
Yeah, no, aesthetics are important though.
They accidentally kill their crowd every single time they play a show. Every member of the crowd dies, and it's hilarious. But like one time
they killed the crowd.
Yeah,
you bastards.
Oh my god,
there's this one time where they're like playing, they made a Duncan Hill's coffee jingle and they were playing it live, and they had a helicopter just with a huge pot of coffee pour it all over the crowd, and it was boiling, so the people just like boiled alive. It was hilarious.
Okay, Pat.
Yeah, I know those kind of shows on Cartoon Network.
It was great.
I thought you were gonna say I know those kinds of shows, like those kinds of metal performances. Like,
oh Lord.
Oh, this is what I'm. They're just gonna do like hot fudge, so we're okay. But next week is coffee. We gotta watch out for that shit.
Yeah, every weekend, baby.
But anyway, sorry. So Colin, I was thinking, we haven't really heard much from you in Hyperlight Drifter, so what's that all about? I haven't really heard that much about it, and how does it relate?
Okay, so Hyperlight Drifter is one of my favorite new games. It came out this past year by a company called Heart Machine. I'll come back to that later, but it's actually relevant to what's happening. Hyperlight Drifter is sort of a top-down adventure game. The makers describe it as a combination between Zelda and Diablo, and it is what I wish Zelda was. I'm not a big Zelda fan, but this game really kind of grabbed me. I think the reason that I was so drawn to this, there are a few thematic similarities, but the art style was a big one. Hyperlight Drifter is pixel art, so that's not quite the same, but the color palettes, coming back to what you were mentioning, Pat, Hyperlight Drifter is a lot of, like, neon greens, teals, pinks, reds, with some blacks and grays. Their application of basic color theory is very similar to what Abaddon is doing with Kill 6 Billion Demons. So that's what initially grabbed me. The more I looked at it, though, Hyperlight Drifter doesn't really have a story so much. It does, but there's no dialogue. Everything is represented through glyphs, pictures that people show you when, instead of speaking. There are letters in the game, but they're all, like, you know, gibberish squares that don't make sense. And it's kind of like, it kind of has a story, not quite. But even the world design has a lot of, like, big corpses, like, on mountains, like these giant robots. And what you kind of get is that something is missing from this world. It's like there are these various civilizations at different corners of the world. Everything is shaped like a diamond. And at each corner, you find, like, a small civilization that has kind of messed some stuff up. So it almost, Hyperlight Drifter to me feels very much like a microcosm of Kill 6 Billion Demons. And actually, when I was reading the comic, I put on the soundtrack to Hyperlight Drifter to keep my brain occupied. And it was just, it felt so right. And most of the comparisons that I can make for these are superficial, but it was really fun to see what it felt like to be in this world with Allison. Having it all, it's like info overload, having people say like, oh my god, but you got the demon gurgles, you got all these gods, the gods that broke and then fought and then fucked and then, and it's just like, what is happening? And then to compare that to Hyperlight Drifter, which is so light on exposition, because there really isn't any, it was really fun to see how similar these two worlds felt without the same kind of narrative push driving them. And I think the thing that really made me want to talk about it was the reason the company's called Heart Machine. The guy who was developing Hyperlight Drifter has a heart condition, and it, like, put him in the hospital in protracted development times, and that's why they call it that. And there isn't a lot of story, but what you get is the main character is ill. Every once in a while, the game will stop, and he'll cough, and blood will fall out of his mouth. And it's just something that's there the whole time. And when Allison, at the end of the first book, went back to Earth and started having, like, this, who am I? Just having, like, this deep crisis, and then that being what pushes her back to hell. It's really fun for me to think that these two things both have protagonists in a world that's being torn apart by people trying to basically usurp power from different things, being driven by, like, this deep personal failing or flaw or personal misunderstanding. And beyond that, it's hard to compare them because of how light Hyperlight Drifter is, and so I imagine as this comic goes on and there's more action, there might be some parallels there. But I didn't want to talk about a game for this, but this really grabbed me. And I'm enjoying them both. I think I like Kill 6 Billion Demons so much because it reminds me so much of Hyperlight Drifter.
Yeah, I know. World building is amazing. Mm-hmm. Especially if you do get the chance, you should definitely read the little things. Underneath each page, Abaddon has inserted, like, some lyrics to songs, but also, like, pieces of writing that Abaddon put in as, like, parts of holy texts that exist in the comics and stuff, and legends and things. Anywho,
the color theory was another thing I wanted to touch on. I made a note of the fact that in hell, it's very deliberate. Everything in the background, well, in heaven, sorry, actually, it's technically heaven. In heaven,
it's like both, right?
Yeah, it's
wasn't hell like a subsect of heaven?
Well, I mean, like, technically, the hell is just the self. That's the thing. So, but the self is also, you see everything through the self, so everything's hell, in a way.
It was very apparent that when they're in there, backgrounds are very warm, colored, reds, oranges, yellows, and people are also very often red, orange, and yellow, unless they're important. Important people are blue or are purple, just to kind of stand out a bit. And then this is just kind of like a general observation, and I kind of noticed it subconsciously. And then when she went back to the real world, all the walls are blue and everyone's dressed in orange. And it's just like, flip it. Just a very kind of basic thing that, I don't know, most people would, I guess, probably notice. But I had a lot of fun playing around with, especially because Hyperlight Drifter will do the same thing where Overworld has a lot of greens and reds, and then Underground is very, like, blues and blacks and stuff like that. It's so fun to superimpose this mythos over the game. It's just, it's so fun. It's, okay, I don't know. That's really what I was thinking about, and I guess some of the presentation, I guess, is what I was focusing on there. I was originally going to talk about Homestar Runner because web content. As I got reading into this, it was pretty hard to draw comparisons between Homestar Runner and Kill 6 Billion Demons.
That's fair.
Strong bad emails don't really feel at home with the demon gurgles, so Hyperlight Drifter felt a little better. Yeah, that did not spark as much conversation as I was hoping.
No, that's fair. The art was really interesting. Like, I hadn't really thought about it through that lens before because I've just been blown back by the narrative when I've seen it and the effort that's obviously gone into creating this mythology. But I was wondering, so, like, we've got Hyperlight Drifter and Wolverine Goes to Hell have, like, these similarly really colorful depictions of, like, the underworld and their denizens and, like, explanations of everything. And, okay, so, Jeff, you're going to have to explain this to me because I dropped off in, like, season 6. I was just done. I couldn't do it anymore. Does Supernatural have more to it for this than, like, just the presence of these, like, demonic angelic beings, etc.? Or, like, what else were you thinking was sort of, like, parallel to this, or perhaps just, like, a completely different interpretation of the same kind of themes and things?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a story that kind of is taking the same sort of influences, like, where this story is, like, taking a lot of different mythologies and, like, kind of contextualizing them into the same universe. Supernatural does that as well. It's like every single episode, like at first they start off and they're like fighting like ghosts and the occasional werewolf and shit like that, but then like as the show progresses, it's almost entirely like angels and demons and, like you said earlier, pagan gods, right? So it like takes a lot of influences from these different mythologies. And like the one thing that I really like about both of these series is because it takes like the idea of like demons and angels, and it's just like, okay, demons are bad and angels are thought of as being good, but then what both of these series do is they're like, no, angels are just also assholes, like everyone's fucking
nothing
evil.
Has meaning. Like, existence is nihilistic,
like apart from like 82 White Chain or whatever, who's also kind of a dick, like the other angel we see, the fucking like creepy hermaphroditic like needle throwing motherfucker, is also like a total dick.
I need to ask, because on that Hell 71 page, I swear to God they listed that angel's name as Delicious.
Hold on,
is that angel's name? I just need to know.
It's not the entire name, but yeah.
But but that angel is named
Pretty
Delicious.
Sure,
okay, cool. Yeah. I'm good.
So I do have a question for you guys that doesn't, it doesn't really relate to your particular domains much, but really more about what you might think about Kill 6 Billion Demons in itself. But like the way that I see it, it seems like, did you pick up on the themes like of gender roles and narrative generally? I think that a lot of the implications, I don't know. Tell me what you think.
So I had an entire section in my notes about how blatantly feminist this is, and I think handling it in a very good, positive, clear way. Even like my biggest criticism of it was like, yeah, it's trying to create a strong female protagonist, but her whole point is to get laid, like have sex with a guy, and that kind of undermines it. But then in the middle, that blue demon person, the Cholula, was like, she just kept...
Cholula!
She was like, because Allison was like, my boyfriend! And Cholula was just like, boyfriend? What the fuck is your problem? That's not important. And it was like, it was very self-aware.
So off-putting to her that she took off her glasses.
Yeah!
She's like, what the fuck?
Cholula
did you just
unmasked. I didn't mention it with Hyper Light Drifter because it's that game is so devoid of gender. Everyone is like a frog or a bird, and the Drifter just has a mask. It kind of looks like a girl most of the time. So that really doesn't play into it. But this is, I think, hugely trying to make a case for awesome female protagonists. And even though most of the demons are androgynous, most of them seem feminine in design or have, I think, more feminine features than masculine features.
Yeah, I think that there's some value to that, and there's like, I haven't quite discerned exactly why this is, but I'm sure that there is like a very pointed thing that the writer was intending by making 82 White Chain so androgynous and getting insulted all the time by being called female. But I also got the vibes of like this being very strongly feminist, especially like I feel like most of the demons that are more sympathetic, like what's her name, right, Kyo or Sio or whatever,
Cholula.
Are very what?
Cholula.
Cholula. Yeah, Cholula are more feminine, right? And then there's also the thing that I mentioned earlier about like having the implication that the demons assumed that the chosen one was the boyfriend, even though it was her, because they were in the same place.
I mean, at the end of this, I can't say much. We are just four white dudes talking about feminism right now, so I don't know how much I don't know how much solid ground we're on at the moment.
You PC, bro?
I think this comic is definitely making an agenda for it, and not. It's definitely in your face at times, but not abrasive and not obnoxious, and it feels well handled. And to be honest, talking about Abaddon, I tried to look it up a little bit. I don't know if it's a guy or a girl. I don't know if you guys know that. To be honest, I don't think it. I was like really hung up on it at first, and then I was just kind of like, no, this is a good story. This is a Hyper Light Drifter comic. Now, this is not really meant to be a ham-fisted connection. I'm actually curious, Pat, with your knowledge of Wolverine and Marvel and stuff, is there like a thing you could do to kill Wolverine? Is there like a regular bullet wouldn't do? Oh, okay, Pat's in it. We're back. Let's go, Brem.
I wish you listeners could have heard that hand.
It's a really sassy wave.
The only thing that theoretically would work would be decapitating him, but it doesn't. There was one part where he literally gets hit by like a nuclear bomb and his entire body disintegrates, but his healing factor is so fast that he just like reappears and starts healing. But I think the whole point of dragging him into hell was trying to permanently kill him because they thought like he'd get overpowered by everybody there who hated him. But obviously Wolverine's a badass, and that didn't happen.
That's going to be a fun parallel if Allison ends up being just as badass as Wolverine.
She's got a ways.
She has had zero penis in her life at all, and and usurps Hugh Jackman's awesomeness.
Well, I don't know. Lord. It seemed like maybe just the tip happened, but like...
Only the bra came off. Even when she comes back, there's like a close-up drawing on that bra on the floor.
And that's all that's on the floor.
And it was
also
okay.
She's also not actually a blonde.
Yeah,
she dyes her hair.
Yeah, I remember that.
A lot of people.
Yeah,
do.
That just discredits her completely.
Yep.
Oh my lord.
Why is that really? I was gonna talk a little bit about the fucking like weird, fucking creepy woman who they haven't explored a lot yet, but she's on. But she like.
Yeah,
the,
with,
the
like,
weird...
the weird, like, her... She kind of looks like the poop emoji.
She's
got
like,
turned upside down and sat on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then there's, like, fucking when she's sitting at the bar
and the
two people
the
come out.
Night.
And then there's... they're and she's just like, okay, I'm gonna leave now. Everything's over. And then they look around and there's just, like, a fucking, like, huge pile of dead bodies in, like, a fucking 5-foot radius around where she was sitting. And then when they're like telling the prophecy of this like chosen hero, which they're assuming to be the guy at that point, and it shows presumably Allison in some like special clothes, like holding a sword, being a badass, and 82 White Chain is there, and so is Chalupa or whatever. And so is that character. And at first I thought it was implying that she was one of the demon gurgles, but no, they're all seven are there, but she's also there. So I think she's going to join up in their... I don't know how far that's gotten in the story, but I feel like she's going to join up to their little group at some point.
Yeah.
Also, for some reason, I've been thinking of her as a centipede, and I don't really know why I think that.
Yeah, that's really weird. She's just not a centipede at all.
You think noodle-eating person is a centipede?
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Yeah.
Beggar
noodle-eating.
Oh, that's
knight.
Not... Oh, Beggar noodle
knight.
Lady.
Yeah,
I thought, okay, that is not the upside down poop emoji person. I'm thinking of someone else.
At one point in the story, they talk about these four groups of, like, knights or something.
Yep.
And one was the mendicant, right?
Yes.
Or the Beggar Knights.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the parallel between the Beggar Knight and the Mendicant Knights was there. I'm not sure, like, what the purpose of the Beggar Knights is yet, but there was a story in one of the the little like text underneath the.
For listeners, Austin looks very excited right now. He is about to bust
Yo,
a nut.
Pat just gets the gold star for doing the extra homework. That's all. Keep going, Pat.
So there's a story in like the Psalms or whatever about this girl whose entire life revolves around staying home and caring for her father. And this mendicant knight comes and shows up and says, I am in love with you. Come run away with me. And she keeps saying, no, I can't. I gotta take care of my dad. So then he keeps doing all these things to make her not have to take care of her dad, to convince her to leave. And then finally she's just like, all right, I'll go with you for like an hour. And then they walk outside and he turns into this like demon ghoul thing and tries to kill her. But somehow she like punches him in the face so hard that his nose breaks into his brain and he dies. And she starts crying because she's like, damn it, the one time a guy expressed interest in me, he turns out to be a murdering asshole. And now I gotta go live with my dad for the rest of my life.
I thought you were gonna say like, oh, damn it, the one time a guy expresses interest in me, I fucking punch him in the face.
Yes, that's where I thought like, this was going. Like,
or, you know, he was a demon.
Yeah, so anyway, in summation, Pat gets the gold star for doing his homework.
Woo.
And thanks for listening. This has been the Common Geeking Program. Today's episode, if you didn't know, was about this webcomic, Kill 6 Billion Demons. We've been talking about it for a while. You can find this comic at killsixbilliondemons.com.
You have to spell it out completely. There's no number. It's just spell out the words. I had a bit of trouble. Sorry.
He went to a porn site accidentally.
Anyway. It's been a pleasure hosting. updates. So we've got a website now. We're at the commongeekingprogram.com. We also have a Twitter. So
the site is commongeekingprogram.com. You find us on Twitter on @geekingprogram, Facebook @geekingprogram, or Common Geeking Program. We have like 9 likes. It's a good start. Let's get to 10.
Amazing.
Goals
for
the
tenth,
end of the
if you're a 10th liker, you get a gold star. gold stars!
And 2 weeks from today, our gold star student Pat over here is going to be hosting his own episode on Rick and Morty. Multiverses and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah.
Sounds cool. Stay tuned.
Oh, wait. Multiverses? I wish I was on that one so I could talk about Pokemon again.
Son of a...
The second episode of the Common Geeking Program is hosted by me, Austin Liebers. I'm joined by Colin Ketchin, Jeff Levitt, and Patrick Brown. This episode is sponsored by the Cosmic Forces that determined you would listen. Special thanks to Disaster Piece and Rooster Teeth for sounds from Hyperlight Drifter and Red vs. Blue. This podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin. This episode was edited by me, Austin Liebers, and features original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like this show, leave us a review on iTunes and check out commongeekingprogram.com to learn more. We hope you tune in again on January 13th for another episode, and thank you for listening to this.
Metalocalypse, that used to be on Adult Swim and then got canceled because Cartoon Network sucks a bag of dicks.
Okay, we'll
come back to that.
Yeah, they do. They're the worst.
So anyway.
Good comeback.
The art style... While the characters are actually...